now this part of the program is we've got three panelists, and each of those guys are going to speak for about 20 to 25 minutes tops. We've got an AA speaker, an Al-Anon speaker, and a dual member speaker. They're going to tell their story from their respective perspectives. And then after that, we're going to, in between, we'll take some breaks. And then after they've all spoken, we'll take a little break and we'll all gather back in here. We'll have an open conversation and we'll see where it goes. So first I'd like to start with Stephen. He's going to tell us a story from the AA perspective.
Is this thing on? Yeah, my name's Steve Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Steve with a V, I guess, since I'm speaking, but this is good for me. It's good to remember that it doesn't matter if there's a V in my name, really. My sobriety date is July 26, 2022. I got a home group, Burke Avenue Men's in Wallingford, 7 p.m. on Thursdays. I got a sponsor, Mark Rose, sitting right there. Got two kids, 6 and 8. Where to start? I guess what I was kind of thinking about coming
in. Stephen, could you stand up?
Yeah, oh, sorry.
Somebody requested it.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem at all. What I was thinking about coming in here and talking about is just, you know, what it was like then, what's like now. I've told my story a few times. You know, the first couple times came in with a lot of notes, thinking about how important it was, and what I could tell all you guys, because I had like 90 days or something like that. Yeah, that doesn't really feel right anymore, does it? I know a little bit, but not that much. You know, what's on my mind right now is like, I think I got an incredibly average story. I think it's a lot of Bill W. I think it's a lot of Dr. Bob. I think it's a lot of all you guys and a bunch of the other ones that I've seen in the back of the book. I think it's kind of funny, it's kind of unique, but not really. And that's been a big part of the program with me, is just seeing everything I thought was so special, important, unique, and incurable is actually kind of curable, normal, deadly, yet solvable with a few simple steps. So I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'm the oldest of three. My mom stayed home with us. My dad was a manager of like an inventory company. He like went into grocery stores and counted all the stuff there to see how much of it had been stolen, what they were missing. So, we didn't have a lot of money, but rather average childhood. I was a pretty good kid. I always got pretty good grades. You know, I'm sure Al-Anon guys would say, yeah, kind of like oldest child factor, definitely an oldest child, eager to please, like praise, like to think, like to be filled up with pride, for sure. My dad's a pretty run-of-the-mill alcoholic, pretty average alcoholic, just like me. He was a daily drinker, so that's definitely part of my story. My mom was definitely like a user, binge user, definitely dealing with a few mental things that she would medicate herself for. It's probably, I don't know if I could diagnose her any more than that. I don't think I should. The home could be pretty chaotic as a result of that. You never kind of knew what you were going to get, right? Sometimes mom was full of love and kisses, and other times it was just like, you're dead right now. You didn't really know what you were going to get. I just kind of poured myself into achievements and outcomes and, you know, tried to point at those, you know, like, well, if I'm getting straight A's, then how bad can it be, kind of thing. As a result of that, I was pretty scared to use drugs. Like, I was like, if there's a gene for this thing, if this thing's genetic, well, I'm done, you know. It's clearly in my family with grandpas and my dad and others. Through high school, I grew up in Portland in the 90s, right? Like, that's also kind of part of the story. It's a weird place. It's like super ahead on some of this like mental health, share your emotions, touchy-feely stuff, which is good. I'm kind of glad I grew up with that, but at the same time, man, that place was just just like a den of pot smoking, belly dancing, Vietnam protesting, big bags of mushrooms everywhere. It's a weird place. Portland in the '90s doesn't exist anymore. But you know, all that to say, it's like, yeah, drugs and alcohol were really, you know, it was really the '60s were kind of still alive. It was like a psychedelic experience was important to your spiritual development, kid. I was definitely resistant to that. I was very scared of drugs and alcohol through high school. But friends started to get me into it. I really liked the idea of smoking pot with my friends. It made me feel included. I was never like super popular. I was more like a math geek. But yeah, if I hung around and kind of pretended to smoke pot with friends, inhaling shallowly, like I liked that guy. I liked who I felt like doing that. And hung around at parties, drank a bit a few times, but really not that much. Went to Gonzaga in 2002 for school, civil engineering school, and really committed myself that I'd better be careful. And was a pretty good kid freshman year. By like sophomore year of college, that's where I really discovered drugs and alcohol. Like just going to keggers, living by myself. Yeah, I finally like managed to drink enough to really get drunk consistently. And I do remember that feeling that I'm sure I've told in meetings before. It's like, okay, like I'm feeling like this is, what have I said? This is the nectar of the gods, man. Like, I don't know what I was so worried about. This really feels like it solves all my problems right now. You know, all that deep anxiety I had wasn't there. I definitely was more sociable. I honestly was making a lot more friends there for a while. And school was really stressful. It was hard for the first time. It'd never really been hard before. And I'm sure my drinking was making it harder. And that just kind of started a cycle of medicating and stressing out and feeling guilt and shame and anxiety and medicating some more. I ballooned up really bad. I always gain weight, like Dr. Bob's story on beer. Beer just like makes me balloon up like crazy. I got to 300 pounds sophomore and junior year. I was having a lot of health problems, which is a big part of my story. Like I had liver disease by 19, 20, and that scared me. And I cleaned up my act junior year, like lost all the weight, didn't do anything for like 4 months. Came back senior year, I met my wife senior year of college, and I made a commitment to myself that I'd better include her this time. I never included her in my story, which is a shitty thing to do. I met her senior year. She was a good drinking buddy at first. I think she would definitely say alcohol was a problem for her when we met. And I'm embarrassed to say I liked that, you know. She was often worse than I was. One of the first nights where we were together, really, we did like a feat of drinking. What do they call it? Tour de Franzia? Like three people to a box of Franzia, and there was a bunch of bike themed stuff around, and you know, people wearing spandex and stuff. And she drank that whole box of Franzia to herself in like 20 minutes. Me and a couple of my big buddies split one, and I took care of her the rest of the night. You know. She was pretty sick. Maybe she could, hospital, no hospital, it was college. And that was 3 or 4 years there. We were hanging out, we were drinking buddies, moved to Seattle, got a job as a civil engineer with a firm. In those days it was a lot of parties, it was a lot of happy hours, and like our college buddies in Seattle. And that era of life kind of reminds me of Bill's story, where it's like drinking and taking an important and exhilarating part of I liked it. Yeah, I liked the identity, being like a firm guy with happy hours and clients. You know, Don Draper was kind of my hero. You know, that was it. Old fashions with clients. This is how you do it. You get filled up with pride. You make big sales. You win. And you drink old fashions a lot. Yeah, the consequences crept in quickly and slowly. Crashed a couple cars those 3 years. Totaled a Honda on the Ship Canal Bridge. Don't remember it very well, but this is a crazy story. It really turned out to be judged not my fault. Someone like careened into me and like six other cars. And it was such a zoo, the cop just didn't have enough time to pay attention to me. I talked my way out of it. Just walked away, like two of my buddies. Which is, it's like a huge part of my, that's such a part of my story. I don't know how I get away with that shit. I always like hide around situations where people are worse than me or something. And I always told myself that, like, I'm not the bad one, he is. And I just kind of hid in the middle of it. But some of that stuff, it's good to remember, it's just crazy. I got married at 26. I was with my wife for, 5 years before that. We got married in Puerto Vallarta. I really remember that as an important time because I was going through withdrawals pretty bad throughout the whole wedding. I was on some Xanax in the mornings to try to keep the shakes under control. Been drinking a lot of liquor, I guess, by myself at that point, to kind of do the math to figure out why that was all happening. That's interesting. I kind of knew I had a problem, didn't I? When I talked to that doctor and was getting benzos to calm myself down, I knew something wasn't right beyond just partying too hard, right? Through my late 20s, I started talking to therapists. I started going through stints of white knuckling it, kind of knowing this wasn't what I wanted. And my wife was calming down. She wanted to have kids, around 30. And I sobered up for like a good year, I think when I was like 29 or 30, on my own, trying to get my liver enzymes down, trying to lose some weight, just trying not to be a disaster. Then I had kids at 30. I remember I was with a doctor at one point where he said I was doing pretty good and that maybe I could have a beer or two. And you guys know what I heard. It's on, is what I heard. no good. I found being a father extremely scary. I was just terrified of everything. And the drinking helped a little bit at first. And it was different in my 30s. Like my wife was done drinking, really. She a little bit with friends, but the kids changed everything for her. She was not a drinking buddy anymore. I don't know how she did it, but she just grew up. I did it. And now she's on me. She was on me with everything, right? She cared about the kids and was thinking about the kids with every drink I took. That was weird. That was never the case before. She was always the problem. I wasn't. This coming from. But things got different, so I started to hide it. I had to go underground. I really remember by 2017, my daughter's born. I remember the night going to the hospital to have her. I was stopping at the office to nip on some gin and get some bottles filled or something like that. I just remembered that last night. I don't think I ever thought about that before. I was in that stage. I always tell Mark, he was reminding me yesterday, every clear liquid in my house was likely vodka, vinegar, some kinds of industrial supplies, old wine bottles that I knew my wife wasn't in, that was just full of vodka. I like to keep it all kinds of interesting places. There's mezzanine in the top of the garage. Nobody would go up there. High places. My wife didn't like ladders, so anything I could reach, she could. That that was pretty in, and where my spare tire is in the trunk of my car, I really liked that. It was under like some felt, and there's just no way she's going in there for a spare tire. Yeah, that was, you know, that was a good 3 or 4 years. My dad died in 2018. Was a big part of that going down. He was an alcoholic. He was also my hero, sort of. He wasn't much of a dad, but he was a pretty good friend. And I didn't like all the things people said about him when he died, because he died an alcoholic's death. He really just ruined his esophagus, blew it out. Needed to have a section of it replaced. Got it rebuilt. We moved him into a house, and he just sort of like it just separated one night. He just died tragically, like by himself. It just separated. He bled to death. And it was like a month after like we moved him out of care facilities and into his own apartment. It was like he's gonna be fine. It's weird. But yeah, I didn't like how like my aunt and my grandma and other people in the family kind of reacted to it. In all fairness, I don't think it was that. They were out of line at all. I think they viewed him as sort of a sad alcoholic, and I really didn't like that. I, you know, felt some kinship. I felt that he was better than that, and you know, I think he had a good perspective on it. Let's just die. Let's just die.
Battery.
Back up. Feel like he. Testing. Yeah, so I felt like my dad had a good perspective on life. He was a good guy. But, you know, on the other hand, I was just a big ballerism, and I didn't need a whole lot of excuse to kind of go off the rails. And that was a pretty good excuse to just drink myself silly for a while, because, how can you tell me what to do when you don't know what I'm going through? It was both those things. By about 2020, there was this thing called COVID, and I'm sure some of you heard about. And they sent me home to drink by my bar. You know, I mostly didn't drink between 8 and about 3 p.m. at that point, but COVID sure took care of that. I just really couldn't find the stomach to sit through the shakes in the morning without starting to drink in the morning. That was a big part of it. And, you know, I had to have liquor delivered from an app with my wife at home. It was a lot harder to hide it, you know. I was hiding like half of it, maybe, but she saw what was going on at that point. So, yeah, like 2020 really started like 2 years of in and out of some detoxes and rehab. I did a detox in 2020. Did like an IOP and was sober for a little bit, but this is how I'm gonna learn to drink right. Like, okay, like I've really learned my lesson. This is my last chance. Like, I gotta do it right this time. And that's really where I used every rule I know about alcoholism, you know. Tried never drinking in the mornings for a while, tried drinking only with friends for a while, tried drinking only wine for a while. It turned out none of that worked. Couldn't control it. It was weird for me. I'm pretty disciplined, I'm pretty driven, I'm pretty successful. Tried pretty damn hard to control that thing, but I pretty much fell flat on my face with every attempt, which is crazy to me. Failed at a whole lot of other things, but I completely failed at controlling this thing. I tried it. I tried it again in 2021. didn't go swimmingly. Yeah, I think I came, drove home really drunk one day, agreed to go to another IOP with my wife, for my wife. Another bottom really got there is I drank a fifth with my buddy one Friday night after like drinking two fifths that day, and he was such a mess, he was breaking things, and his wife was just like terrified, and you know, looked at me like, why did you come over and do this? For some reason, I was like, man, that was like a bottom for me. I was like, man, I really am like just a fucking wrecking ball, and causing people problems in their lives. That got me into one. I did one last run after that second IOP. I still just had the same message, like one more chance. Like if I just don't break these rules, then everything will be okay. I'm so embarrassed to say those words out loud. I don't know why I could have possibly thought that in like the beginning of 2022. But yeah, I drank for like 12 weeks from April to July of 2022, and that was dark. I was just like, knew exactly what I was doing, just completely powerless trying to manage. Just my rules turned into 24/7 drinking within like a couple of weeks. And my wife probably didn't see how bad it got that fast. They went on like a trip to Montana in the summer, and I told them I had to work. And about like 3 days into that, I was just telling myself, you know, I'm gonna clean up by the time I get back. About like 3 days into it, I was just like, maybe I can go to detox and be cleaned up by the time they get back. And I checked myself in. There was nobody around. And then I agreed to stay for 30 days inpatient in July. Went down to California and found AA there. That, you know, July 26, 2022. That's my current sobriety date. Found AA down there. I found that the treatment program of moderate help. I've really abused therapists and the support system throughout my life. I've lied to therapists for about 2 decades. I'm from Portland in the 90s. I know what to tell them. You know, it's just like, I just abuse that system. I don't find it to be a very good cure for my alcoholism. I don't know. That's just me. But yeah, then I found AA. I immediately noticed that you guys kind of were going to let me get up and walk away if I wanted to. And that was big. I was like, oh, interesting. I noticed you guys didn't want my money, which was also very interesting. Made a big difference. And you guys didn't always tell me what I wanted to hear. I found all those things related. I threw myself right into the program. I really started working this thing. I got through the steps in probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 months. worked through the steps with a guy I met in Newport Beach, California, and asked Mark to be my sponsor, I think, right after my year. So now, you know, what it's been like now, I do really like the steps. I like the literature. I'm an academic, or I'd say almost embarrassedly to say, like, I needed the literature to kind of win the higher power argument for me, win the powerlessness argument for me, and it's done all that. You know, step one took me 19 years, I got there. It took me about 10 years to get to powerless, took me about 9 more to get to unmanageable, to say it in short, right? I could manage for like 9 more years there. Step two is pretty damn hard too. The 12 and 12 step two kind of won it for me. I was really that intellectual guy who could explain everything away, so there's nothing greater than me. And I was that belligerent one who was just so mad at all religion that I got to excuse myself from it, perhaps. And I don't know that I'm necessarily 100% wrong about either of those things, but what that text showed me is it was my problem. I'm a stereotype they wrote about in 1952 on both of those things, and I thought I had a pretty special and unique understanding of size, and I decided I better give it a try. I really like step 6 and 7. I think like constant work on defects I'm interested in, and therefore like focusing on virtues that I prioritize, is a really good daily practice. I think Mark showed me a lot about how to work 10 to evaluate my day and how to make amends. I'm still working on how to make amends. I don't like saying I'm sorry. I feel like a lot of people I've done amends with have hurt me worse than I've hurt them sometimes. I have a really hard time with that. Don't like saying I'm wrong. I'm working on it. And I've taken on sponsees this year. I got a few guys on step 6 and 7. I got a guy on step 4. I got a guy all the way through the steps. So I do a lot of step work. That's a big part of my program. So how am I doing on time?
About wrapping up, I think.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Good. Wrap it up. Yeah, well, what I want to wrap it up with is gratitude. This is good. Everything is much better. My wife was about to leave me in the 2020s. It's not happening anymore. We're doing pretty good. I feel reflexively grateful as a part of step work, which is really weird. Like, I used to always just, you know, have somebody in traffic or like drop my phone or like have to get up out of a chair and be a big ball of resentment, be really angry. And lately, I feel grateful. It's like, I didn't break my phone. That guy didn't hit my car. And it's like, I don't feel like I'm doing that. Just happens, you know, just like the gratitude just sort of hits me. I feel like work goes so much better. I got 16 or 18 employees. I mostly just try to show up and say things like, I think we should tell the truth. Maybe we should say we're sorry. Sounds like that person's feeling afraid, maybe. Maybe we should be so afraid. Sounds like this isn't that big of a deal. It's okay. Yeah, that's like to people where like our day to day is like a lot of math and construction. But it's like that, as a manager, I feel like that's all I do. It's just like try to practice the principles. It makes everything tolerable, serene, evens out those highs and lows that I used to love to ride.